Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. My name is Sam Kroma. Thank you for tuning in to Shabbat Black Experience in Hazard. On this episode, we will discuss the ongoing racism, white supremacy, corruption, media lies, disrespect from different city council, Carl Village Collaborative, Denver Housing Authority, host the fellow turned out mayor of Denver, Michael Hancock, in regards to the Wayne troops. You're a black man and unhoused. You're subjected to a system of racism, white supremacy. Don't fight back or you'll suffer the consequence of systematic retaliation. This episode is for those that are 18 years of age or older. And I'm also joined with Lady Che. Lady Che is going to be interviewing Dwayne Peterson tonight. So, Lady Che.
Good evening. Shabbat is a black experience in hand. Thank you for joining us. I do believe we have a Dwayne Peterson in here, right? I do want to apologize for our target. We have the longest day. If you've been outside, it's kind of cold. So we were waiting. You know, you should never let people that have been up all day getting things ready for such an event to just sit still. You know, and got warm, and I was upset and so sleeping and accidentally overslept. So I apologize to you, sir.
That's okay.
As far as starting this, it's my fault. But we were ready. I want to talk about the Colorado Colorado Village Collaborative. And as you know, Black family, I'm going to be hosting the show. If it's probably hosted off and on with Shay and possibly Ramel Understanding, off and on until Brother Shabaka is done with his work and he's able to take the reins back. And, you know, as he's doing revolutionary things, he's doing revolutionary things. So I'm in charge. So let me give you guys a little backstory. This gentleman has been going through a very serious situation, Black family. Is it serious? I'm talking about serious. About almost 2 years. What did you say? Almost about 2 years. Should we go through this way?
Yeah, 2 years.
Yeah, almost 2 years. Yeah. Would you like to explain a little bit more? About, why don't you go ahead and open it up? they get your a full understanding, a little backstory of how it started, so I can lead into what you've been going through.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess it's been three and a half years now. I became homeless due to no fault of my own. And as I started to navigate the homeless environment, I met Jesse. And at the time, Jesse was running for, and Brandy had to remind me of this yesterday, Denver City Council. And through Jesse, I became involved with Denver Homeless Out Loud. And initially, I was advocating for all homeless people. And as I started to develop a network, I heard about the Tiny Home Village, went to a seminar or a presentation about it at the library, and applied, I think, 2 or 3 months later, and then was called in for an interview about 6 months later, and was accepted, and this was in February of 2020. So that's how I became involved with Beloved Community Village. That's the nuts and bolts of it.
Okay, and tell the people who you are, Dwayne. Like, before you were on this, what were you doing? How long have you been in the gym?
Okay. Well, my name is Dwayne Peterson. I'm 58 years old. I'm a Black male. I grew up in, my formative years were in Aurora back in the 70s and 80s. And then after high school, I moved to Capitol Hill. And then I started dancing as a ballet dancer. And I did that for about 18 years, and then I went to CU Boulder and acquired my undergraduate degree at the age of 37, and then I went back to CU and for my master's. And then after college, I continued to dance and moved back to Denver. Or actually, I was always in Denver, and I commuted up to Boulder, and started working at a law firm, and now I have a somewhat of a legal background, not attorney, but more so like a paralegal background,
mm-hmm.
And was living in an apartment in Washington Park for 17 years. And it was in disrepair, and there was a house with four apartments on the same lot. And so it was controlled by the same landlord. And so things were just getting worse and worse as far as repairs. And we all came together and confronted and said to the landlord, you need to fix these things. And in a matter of 3 days, the property was sold. And so it didn't just displace, it just didn't displace myself. It displaced four other people. And so that's how, and I knew the writing was on the wall a few months earlier, so I started saving money, but then the rug was pulled out from underneath all of us, and I knew I had to prepare myself psychologically that I was going to become unhoused. So that was about four years ago, and here I am now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I know.
After 4 years.
It's a while, like, you establish yourself again. And sometimes every night, I would my situation is 3-4 years. Before, in the condition of the image, the element colleague would be able to stop my hurt during the time of COVID. And I kind of got lucky to get into a motel room at first. And then I just behaved myself and I kept it. And I was at the verge of losing it. Maybe once when I was with a very dysfunctional past relationship, and when I got into like the serious part of housing from being unhoused, which would be like a apartment living, temporary apartment, was with the help of Jesse. I have seen Denver Homeless Out Loud. I think the coalition outreach team, the field treat, the ones that were outside, the street outreach team and the clinic outreach team from the free clinic, the South Street Clinic, come around to all the encampments and all the little tents here and there every couple of days, you know. And some days I would elect to talk to him or ignore him, you know, depending on how I feel, because, you know, I always feel like someone come talk to you at your tent, unless they bring you food or something you needed. It's always like either the police or some sort of harassment, you know. And I would elect to not. And I, at that time, you know, for the first, all the way up until I got into a housing into an actual motel room permanently, like more than 2 days. I was doing drugs. I was selling drugs or doing drugs, or I was, you know, very dysfunctional on the street. Very much like you always hear me family say, I was a degenerate. You know, according to like David Black, I was a degenerate. I changed a lot, especially over the last year, but over the last it was about 8-9 months, it's been severe actual change, a whole mental change, you know. So it's very hard. I don't think I would have been able to do it, Dwayne, honestly, if it wasn't for him advocating and really helping me get through it, because I didn't have no one to advocate for me, especially that I was suffering. I too am a victim of racism and white supremacy, especially being homeless. so I suffered like a lot of ugly things behind the police and the system, and that I could never, ever, ever. I had 2 vouchers, but I wouldn't use them because I didn't think I would be able to. Nowhere in my whole life, no matter how light I am, never got a pass for anything. So I didn't think they were going to give me an apartment. They really did. I thought they were just trying to trap me, just to throw me in jail like they always do, you know. That's all I know. Street, jail, out for a little bit. Hospital, street, jail, out for a little bit. I didn't even cycle. I couldn't get myself out of, so. Well, I don't think I could ever do it without help. So I know exactly what it feels like. I just never been to the level. Like those little houses that Jesse helped build to. I thought, oh, good. That's missed him. I thought they were like a very serious privilege. Way bigger step up from the tent.
We're from 443 last 4-5-7-6-3. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Y'all know who it is. What's up?
Yeah,
what's
over here? Black Power.
Black Power.
There it is.
Thank you. Yeah, this is how y'all hear about those students and shit.
Yeah, but thank you for coming on.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
What's the show about?
Yeah, we're talking with our friend, Dwayne Peterson. Now, so this CBC, in your case, Beloved Village Collaborative, right? Being with Jesse in my version of things, Dwayne. I cover the street, so I saw it from the street angle what the tiny homes and the SOS camps were, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where Toby and Dwayne were, hold on, brother, there. From this perspective, from Jesse's perspective, on the political side, I didn't really ever understand until I actually sat back and watched and started really looking at politics. I've always been a gang member, you know, that's really bad. So I never saw it through the eyes of politics or the eyes of actual neighbors until you came along, gang. We were doing the, is he still with us? Are you still with us, Dwayne?
Yeah, we're doing, I'm here. I'm listening.
I saw your case. Well, actually, we heard about it through Jerry Burton, right? Yeah, I guess Jerry Burton, Mr. Roach and Jerry Burton had told us about it before the 112 recommendations. Jesse had to read the 112 recommendations. We're outside and you were doing city council. And we were kind of doing both. We're outside of the building. Jerry called in. And we're watching city council as well, waiting for our turn to speak. And doing the city, and, you know, standing outside, and Jesse is charged with reading, because he's on the task force. So he's charged with reading the 112 recommendations for the police, right, that the city wanted, that the people want. And so I heard your case, and I said, oh, this is some shit. I was telling Jesse, you know, because that's what I thought. And this is some shit, man. Look how they doing this, brother. Blah, blah, right? And saw... Because anything comes across Jesse, I say it comes across the desk. I treat it like a political office in here, right? If it comes across the desk, I can see it, and I'm reading it. And I read the email that you sent to Jerry. Jerry sent it to Jesse, and it went around to other people because it's serious, right? So I finally read it. I'm like, oh, no wonder. Oh, that's that shit. I said, man, watch. And when I heard your voice, it was like, this is serious. So we expect city council. You want to hold city council accountable when they hear your message, right? That they're going to do something for you. And they did it. They never did. And I keep, we asked, twice afterwards, right, separate instances to city council during a public comment. Nothing had happened. And then to hear about it again, like, I took it off of Jesse's desk, right? So I just took the case from Jesse. That's how I can explain it to my brain. Okay, Black Diamond. I, like, took the case. I said, all right, I'm gonna make sure something happens because the city don't like me anyway. City council thinks I'm a bully. The people who write articles about us every time we talk on Mondays, you know, they make sure to highlight that. And all of a sudden, you know, it's more than likely mine and Jesse's fault this year. The city council has a decorum factor because Jesse his own presence is threatening some days when he's mad, you know. He has to give him the shame on you, city council speech, right? For me, I'm more like, everybody should be fired. And I just go in and I'm just very disrespectful, very rough, very street, very disrespectful altogether. And they don't like that because I see it for what it is. The numbers don't make sense. And this whole Chandler, right? It's like, I thought he was a villain from off top. And a lot of situations, like a lot of service providers, you would hear me out say that they should be shut down, that there's something wrong, that the numbers don't make sense. They're not housing all these people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then reading your stuff, every time something bad happens, you know, you filed a police report or you were going to sue somebody or you made contact with the police or you're being harassed by white people, it just got more and more intense. And for me, it was more of an injustice because, man, it's already hard for you, you know what I mean, as a black man. So, it's just getting worse. And they're not being held accountable. They don't want to do anything. They want to ignore it. They kind of just want to, if they don't acknowledge you, you don't exist, and that is your problem. And they can listen to the people who represent the village. They keep asking for money to make new ones or whatever they need. They ask for millions of dollars to fund this program, to run this program. And where is the money going? And why is only this small percentage allegedly being housed? Then why are you still going through the situations you're going through? Almost daily, weekly, we're seeing it, we're reading about it, we're hearing about it, but nobody's moving on it. And that's what piqued the interest heavily. So it took me a little bit to get it together, to bring it to, at least to our people, in our show, on the Revolutionary Agenda. And then me and you had a chat, and I was just going in, telling Jesse yesterday about it, or this morning, in the midst of a sleep. I had spoke to you for like almost 2 hours. And I said, and the man is very intelligent. I don't understand. And I understand why they don't take it seriously. And he speaks eloquently. And I had a cheap fresh felt that word. You know, so I was like, I don't understand why these white people don't take it seriously. Because, you know, I can understand when you speak like me and you're rough like me, they're going to ignore you. But I couldn't understand, and now I've seen it. Like, for what it was, like I always said, this is racist. And reading everything that you sent me, I read it on my show. It is very racist and very dangerous. I mean, I don't even like being around white people, period, ever, at all. I barely talk to them. They don't even talk to me. And when they talk to me, they don't talk to me. They talk to Jesse. They don't want to talk to me. So I feel grand, serious fear and anger like of no other. So I couldn't understand how you could live through this, sir, because they surrounded you. You know, they bullied you. Menaced, really. Mm-hmm. And there's a number of real crimes going on there that you brought to the forefront that have never been addressed.
Yeah. In addition, I don't know if you're aware, Dwayne, but there were two other brothers that were living at the tiny home village when it first opened up. And that was Tex and Maya. And they both got kicked out the village. According to Steele and The reason why they got kicked off the Devils is because they were violent. And I believe the Lions had pulled a chain out on one of them. It was probably Cody. Cody's been a problem for a long time. And they just been coddling him. And the rest that you mentioned, the five others, including Bobby, they've been a problem for years. And CBC has just looked the other way. Cole Chandler's has looked the other way. And so have others that were involved in the process looked the other way, such as Therese Howard. But myself, me and Jerry Burton both been exposing the racism and white supremacy within all of these organizations, including Denver Homicide Lab. They tried to tokenize me and Jerry, and we weren't having it. Stole Jerry's idea. It was Jerry's idea in the first place. I wish he would come on to create the tiny home villages. How that came about was police were harassing him and others by Jurassic Park in a snowstorm. I mean, it was
Religious,
straight up. Jerry's a Marine, so he was trained to be able to survive in just about any environment. So he's out there with the unhoused, because at that time, I don't think he was necessarily unhoused, but he went out there anyway, because that's just what Jerry does. This is before Jerryville. His blanket was taken, his military-issue blanket was taken, and Kayvon Kabari, the owner of Sexy Pizza, and also mayoral candidate in 2019, he ran a 2-year campaign and then it dropped out after Chairman Sekou, my pop, told him to go fishing. And after they went fishing, he dropped out the race. Because if you couldn't beat a black man by the name of Jeffrey Washington for at large, what makes you think that you're going to beat me for mayor? So he dropped out, but Kayvon was also instrumental in getting the tiny home villages. See, because when he was there, he recorded the police. He took pictures and video of the police taking Jerry's blanket. Well, this video ended up at the desk of city council and the mayor, and we literally forced them, the people, the unhoused neighbors forced them to do this pilot project, which became the tiny home village. Well, we had to fight for years just to get that off the ground, because back in 2016, a bunch of us would occupy Denver and other organizations, Denver Homeless Out Loud. There's probably some other organizations involved at the time. Built like 6 tiny home villages in an enclosure. At the time, it was an enclosure. There was nothing built there. They had just tore down the housing projects that were there, so it was just an empty lot. So in this empty lot, we built like 6 tiny homes. The city came in, SWAT came in, and swatted the whole camp.
Oh, wait a minute. They tore that down, too.
They took everybody to jail. They took all the tiny homes. They took all the tools and materials that were used to build the tiny homes.
Mm-hmm.
And still to this day, in 2022, we haven't got any of that stuff back.
Damn.
So that's what sparked the tiny home movement here in Denver. And then Jerry, after that, went on to create Jerryville. And Jerryville was an encampment that Jerry ran. And he was the mayor of that encampment. So we call him the mayor of Jerryville.
Is it tiny homes for the homeless people?
Yeah, there were tiny homes for homeless people. Like they're like a dog house, a little bit bigger than a dog house. But in essence, you could call them dog houses, like that they're dog houses for people. And I don't know how Dwayne lived through the hell that he lived through in one of those, but maybe we can give him the floor. He can tell us about his experience because Lady Che had outlined it on her show the other day, but we would like to hear from Dwayne Peterson, like, what was your experience at Beloved Community Village? How were you able to get out of it? Who did you go to? Escape would say, who did you run to from the savagery that you were forced to endure?
First of all, Jesse, thanks for that background information. I didn't know the backstory prior to Jerryville. It sounds like getting up to that point was trial and error as well. So, as far as my experience, I don't know if you recall, Jesse, but I think initially I found out about the Tiny Home Village when you mentioned it in a meeting at Denver Homeless Out Loud, and you were talking about the racial disparity.
Yeah, I was talking about the racial disparity because Therese and others wanted to neglect that. They wanted to all lives matter this, and this is not an all lives matter situation. This is straight genocide on black people. This is anti-black hatred. If George Floyd and what happened in Buffalo didn't show you that, I don't know what will. But they were in denial that there was racism even going on at the village, and me and Jerry kept it in that era, like, no, this is wrong. You know you have this tiny home village. You're not even, because how it came about, I believe I was like, hey, why can't Dwayne stay at the house? And I guess Stephanie Gypsy had messed that up for everybody, because prior to Gypsy's fuckery, basically, that got her kicked out the house, we used to have guests at the house at the Post Pony Palace of all colors and creeds and everything. And after that, there was a no-go, especially if you were black. You definitely couldn't go to the house.
Well, and you're right, Jesse. And the thing is that all that time at all those meetings at Denver Homeless Out Loud, I never knew about this place called The Pony until you mentioned it weeks later. And I remember you just being really surprised.
Yeah, because Therese, when I first came into Denver Homeless Out Loud with my partner at the time, she told us about it. Because she was like, we have a house. And I was like, what? She's like, yeah, we have a house, and it's on the east side or on this side of town. I'm like, what? I grew up in this neighborhood. You have a house here? So then I visited the house, and then I basically ended up staying at the house for 5 years.
Oh.
I was glad I
heard
about this, man.
Leo,
so you fancy homeless, Jerry?
No, I was really out there.
And I'm like, I was homeless, sleeping on the sidewalk. Now that did you shake up the
air. I was sleeping on the sidewalk, too, before I got in the house.
I didn't know they had a house. They were up in the tent, and she was just, so you can come by. And, I see Jesse. The meeting, for Jerry's cooking, I don't show for Jerry's cooking. And or a little town hall meeting.
And
some shit going, and even though
TV
people surrounded by the police, they
go, close. We have to do a show on what that house was all about and how you got into that house and all that shit, because all that is quite, that's secret. That's why they were so secretive with you, Dwayne. They didn't want you to find out about it.
Well, I was on the street, and it was, I was still going through shock, so I wasn't, when I finally found out about it, and then I found out about it being secretive and controversial, and why didn't you tell, people, I was just kind of like, just taking it all in. I really didn't get defensive about it. I'm just kind of like, oh, this is just more, this is just new information as part of navigating the homeless, you know, culture. You know, I was so, I didn't really take offense to it. I was just kind of like, oh, well, this is just another political thing that I'm learning through this whole process.
2-3 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he just prayed up. Yeah, because Lowville was mad about it. When the village moved to, from 38th and Blake to 44th and Pearl, some people were not happy about it. It just was like, damn, city, you're just going to drop this in our lap? We don't even have a library. We've been neglected for like 30 years. And now you want to just drop a village in here, and we don't know these people. We don't know these people from Adam. And the way those white supremacists run it, it's a wonder why they did, it's a wonder why that community didn't want them, because they're making all unhoused people look bad with what they're doing.
Right.
That's what I'm talking about, yeah.
Brandy, I'm getting a lot of feedback.
It's because I'm not muted. Hold on. We're too close. Because it started late.
Let me hang up. All right. Can you hear me now? Yeah, I can hear you, Brother Isaiah. Can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
Okay, yeah, I can hear you now, y'all.
All right. So does Bobby have a last name, Dwayne?
He does. I just cannot. I can't remember it, or I just never knew it. He and I didn't engage. I'm sorry?
Did he have a unit number?
Number 9.
Yeah, okay, because I was curious about Bobby. Because he's the only one without real details. You know, you got almost everybody but Bobby, you know? I like to say it just like that, Bobby. You know, it's funny to me, but it's not funny, you know what I mean?
Let's
talk about Cole.
I may not have his last name, but I do know a lot about him.
Yeah. Let's talk about Cody first, because Cody seems to be the ringleader of most of this, right?
Not really. There's a group of them, and it's changed because some of them have left, but it used to be I would call it the nucleus. It was usually villagers who had been there from the beginning, or who told me they were there from the beginning, but Cody is just. He's just one of the weeds. He's not a driving force. He's just one of the forces. Hello? Hello?
Can you hear me? I think you can't call in, Jesse. Yeah, because I'll let you.
Hello?
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear
Hello?
You now.
Okay. This is Don't Touch Nothing Else. I think we'll be all right. We have technical difficulties with Blog Talk once in a while. Forgive us. So who gave you the how did it initiate? Who gave you the worst problem?
Well, it was kind of spread out. Initially. There was a woman there by the name of Aurora Babcock, and I guess at that time one would probably define her as the ringleader, but...
Holly or Aurora?
Aurora Babcock.
She's been a problem since day one. That one there, I've been telling Teresa Still and all them about her for years. They don't give a damn. They just let her do whatever. Aurora, she can do no wrong in their eyes.
Well, I do, as you probably know, initially, I mean, they have a weekly meeting. And from the very first meeting to, I think, 6 or 7 months later, when I stopped going to these weekly meetings, there was always an altercation or a disruption in which somebody was just had an epic meltdown. And Aurora was one of those people because she just didn't feel like she was getting respect. And here's another thing, too, is that...
She didn't feel like she was getting respect.
And you probably... I'm sorry?
You said she didn't feel like she was getting respect.
Right, because one of the things that we all discovered at the time was that BCV was never meant to be self-governing. And...
Yeah.
And so when we got news of that, Aurora and the villagers who like to define themselves as founding villagers became very upset, physically upset. And I can't tell you the number of times I saw physical altercations at these meetings, people trying to destroy property at these meetings. And then most of the time, these meetings would just end where everyone, you know, this nucleus that I call them of people would just leave, and then the meeting would be over. And I'm like, and I just got to the point where I'm like, this is not healthy for me. And I just stopped attending. So
yeah, that makes
to
sense.
Answer Brent,
so that had an issue with, oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, so to answer Brandy's question about who gave me, you know, over time it was Cody, and what I discovered was, what I started to see over time was Cody, Bobby, Luna, Haley King, and Sandra Herman, who are all Caucasian, ganging up on people of color at the village. And I can't tell you the number of times when I would see a person of color walk outside of their house, and then all of a sudden it became a witch hunt where I would see Cody, Bobby, Sandra, Haley, and Luna all congregate around this person. And I was told on a couple of occasions that they actually, and this is actually illegal, but it's kidnapping. They actually detained one person of color on two separate occasions inside the community house. The person who was detained, and I'm not going to give away his name because I don't want to incriminate him. He told me about it, and I said, you know, that's in essence kidnapping. I said, you can file a report. And he said, Dwayne, I don't have anywhere to go. They're going to kick me out if I report something. I'm like, that's crazy. He's like, please just don't say anything. So it was kind of like a tag team at times, and then it was kind of like a mob at times. But the players remained the same. And what would happen is when new Caucasian residents came in, this nucleus would basically recruit them and say, okay, these are the rules. These are people that that are causing us problems, and those people were usually people of color. And I can't tell you the number of times, and I reported this to Cole and Steele and Dorothy and everyone at CBC. Mm-hmm. I said, there is something going on here, and it's racist, and I'm telling you, the other people who are affected are afraid to come to you because for some reason they're afraid they're going to get kicked out. And I asked, I'm like, well, why do you think that, why do you think they fear coming to you? And they're like, well, we don't know. We have open arms. And I'm like, no, you don't. And I started to have this dialogue with them on a daily basis. And I'm like, you need to address this because something is going on. So anyway, sorry, I'm digressing a little bit, but over time, Cody,
I gave you the floor. Whatever you want to spend. I said, you're good.
Well,
still got almost an hour left.
Oh yeah. Well, over time, when I realized that CBC, so I make complaints through the CBC portal, And I have records of those complaints. Well, most of my complaints, they would come back, quote unquote, unsubstantiated, which means they don't have any proof. So I started documenting things, and I started calling the police. And word got out that I was calling the police, because I was calling the police like at all times of the night, 3:30 in the morning, midnight, 11:30, I mean, 6 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, so I was coming back to the village early one morning, and I'm leaving out a lot, but I just want to mention that there was a buildup over time, because I started to hear people say, you know, Dwayne, we don't like you. We don't want you here. You don't deserve to be here. You called a cop. Are you a cop? I'm sorry?
All this because you stopped coming to the meeting.
Well, no, it wasn't just that. It was when I started calling the police, because there's this unwritten rule, and I mentioned it in one of my emails at BCV, that no, you don't call the police. Even BCV staff stated that to me. They have stated that they like to handle things internally.
Okay.
And I
said,
the next question,
you don't have to answer it now, but the next question is, what were the bathrooms and the sanitary conditions at the village? But you don't have to talk about that right now. That's the next question. So finish your thought on what you were talking about.
Yeah. So I stopped coming to the meetings. I was getting hassled because of that. And I said, you know what? The meetings are not healthy environments. You promote a healthy environment and an environment. And I would highlight things in the CDC mission statement about safety and health when I would argue my case against not coming to the meetings. But I was still getting hassled. And then when I realized that all my complaints were coming back unsubstantiated, I said, oh, well, I'm just going to start calling the police. So I started calling the police almost every single day. And one morning I came back, and this is getting to Brandy's question, hopefully. One morning I was coming through the fence, and Cody approached me, and he starts yelling at me. And during his tirade, he calls me a fucking nigger. And then he says, I can get a gun and have you removed from this village because you don't belong here. So I kept walking. I get back to my unit. I call the police, and then I call Dorothy. I call Dorothy of BCV staff. And I'm like, hey, I've called the police. I've had an incident with Cody. And her response was, Dwayne, we have to learn to get along amicably. And my response was,
yeah. What was your response?
So my response was, I've called the police. He has violated my person. I have every right to call the police. These are individual residencies. And I just kept going down the list of my civil rights. And I said,
right.
And so during that conversation with Dorothy before the police arrived, I said, I want to see surveillance. I want to see video surveillance immediately. And she said, oh, no, I'll look at it and get back to you in a few days. And I said, no, I want to see it as soon as possible. And she's like, and this was a Sunday. So she's like, I won't be in until Monday. I'm like, well, I want to see it first thing Monday when you get in. So jumping forward, I never get an invitation to see it. A few days later, she emails me back and says, Dwayne, I don't see anything on the video. And I'm like, you're insane. I said, that's impossible. So then back up. So I'm waiting for the police. Two officers arrive. And I'm like, hey, this is what has happened. I've been threatened with the use of a firearm. I've been called a racial slur. And then Cody walks by. And I'm like, that's the guy who violated my person. And the police said, you know, Dwayne, unfortunately, since George Floyd, our hands are tied. We need to see him committing the crime. And I said, what do I do? They're like, well, this is a civil matter. You'll need to take it up. You'll need to, you know, we're not offering you legal advice, but we recommend that you get an attorney, yada, yada, yada. You can go and also file a restraining order. And I said, okay, well, when will the police report be available? And they're like, it should be available within 24 hours. So that's when things started to snowball, because I was calling the police. This is how bad things are there. And this hopefully is a segue into the sanitation question. I saw rats living under people's units outdoors. And Cody's place is so I started to call the police. Also I want to mention, in addition to that, I would hear Cody like punching the walls inside of his unit and yelling and screaming. And so I constantly called the police, and I think I forwarded an email to Brandy showing the police officers that I've contacted over the 2 years. So anyway, Cody, you know, people find out I'm calling the police, and then
the police aren't even taking it seriously. They're just thinking you're playing. They're talking about they have to see him attack you before they can do something. That's racist and white supremacy, bro. That's a lie, and it's racist and white supremacy. Because if you was white, they would have did something. If you was anything other than black, they would have did something. But since you're black, oh, they have to attack you. We have to see them attack you.
I just
want to
experience them. That's the actual charge. Like
that's medicine. It's intent.
It's intent to cause harm.
It's
the actual charge.
Yeah, intent to cause harm is the actual charge, yeah.
So
fast forward to now. You're suing them, right? But before we fast forward, could you go over the sanitary conditions in the bathroom and all of that?
It was disgusting. But I want to say this. When I first moved in, it looked as if the trash had not been taken out for months. And there were dog droppings all over the property. And So I'm thinking, I just moved in here. I'm going to do my part. So I start taking out the trash and cleaning up the property. Well, and then, you know, there's rules with like cleaning the house. So I would sign up to a chore list. So I would sign up for chores.
Yeah.
And so what happened over, I'm
sorry. Like all in the big house and there were little houses around it or something.
Well, they have a community
area. Yeah, the community room or area.
Yeah, the community house is like a house. It has three bathrooms. It has a big open area, and then it has a full kitchen. And
right. Yep.
And when I first moved in, they had a number system for chores. And you either met that number system based on the number of chores you did, or if you didn't meet it, you would be sanctioned. There would be consequences. Mm. And so I'm just kind of like, this seems to be pretty easy. But what I found out over time, so anyway, I'm taking out the trash and I'm cleaning up things, and I just sent out this email today. Within, like, the first 2 weeks, I would go into the community house, and one, two, or all three of the bathrooms, the toilets would be overflowing. There would be feces and urine everywhere, but it's not just from the toilet. Somebody or some persons were taking feces and smearing it on the walls. And because, you know, I'm thinking, you know, if things overflow in the toilet, things are going to splash, you know. But this feces was like, I'm 6'1". Feces was at my, at that height, and it was all over the place. And I remember Cole, Dorothy, and Steele coming into the community house one day when I'm cleaning one of the bathrooms, and I'm like, you guys need to look at this because this is bullshit. And so they looked at it. They came out, and Steele said to me, Dwayne, are you looking for another place to live because you need to accept that this is going to happen among the, this population?
Oh, hell no. He told
and
you
so,
that?
Yeah. So, and I confronted him on many subsequent days about that comment. But my response at the time, and I said, and Cole was there as well. I'm like, no, this is unhealthy. This is unsanitary. You know, I'm like, this is a health hazard to everyone. And they're like, yeah, Dwayne, we'll address it. So to answer your question, Jesse, the bathrooms, before I moved into the village, I'm not sure if you were there, Jesse, but I know Therese was there. We had a meeting with the then police chief, Britta Fisher, and a bunch of people from the city. One of those people is Danica Lee, who is the director of the Environmental Health Agency in the city of Denver. So when I started to see, yeah, so when I started to see these the unsanitary conditions, I start taking pictures. And I sent them to Danica, and I'm like, Danica, I think there's something wrong. Can you address this? And so she's like, oh yeah, sure. So she sent someone out unannounced the next day, and I have a record of that, of their findings, because they said they found trash and feces on the ground, all over the ground, and that they had notified Cole that needed to be cleaned up. So I have a record of that that transaction with Danica. And since that subsequent time, I was always taking pictures and saying, Danica, this is the situation that it is now. It's returned to this. And she's like, okay, Dwayne, we'll send somebody else out. But they would do what they did. VCV residents, they would, I guess, call themselves, clean it up for one day, and then it would just go back to trash the next. And so to answer your question, hopefully, in conclusion, Jesse, I stopped cleaning everything about a year, about a year into my residency. And I'm like, I'm not doing this anymore. And so by that time, I was, I had joined a gym. And so I was showering at the gym. I would go to work out, shower, and then I would just stay away. And I started to get harassed not only by residents, but also by BCV staff, like, hey, Dwayne, you're not pulling your weight. And then again, I'm like, hey, you've seen what I've seen. You've acknowledged that I've been doing all the work and I'm done. So get off my back. And so that lasted for another year until a week before I left in February.
During this time, how many people of color, as you say, I hate that term, I just go with black, but how many black people or non-whites were at the village during this time?
Well,
I know it was you, Freddie, and maybe one other.
You're right. And actually, in that one other person, if we're talking about the same person, they were a couple. So it was a male and a female. And they were being harassed, and they left, like, just unannounced or, you know, out of the blue. Like, one day they were there, and then they were gone. But I talked to the female, and all of these people are black.
Just listen, if you want to talk, hit one, and they'll let you talk on air.
Oh, is this Tabaka?
Hello?
Tabaka.
Hey, what's going on?
This is the host of the show, Dwayne. We're interviewing Dwayne Peterson, his brother that suffered atrocities at the beloved tiny home village, and we're letting him tell his story tonight.
Yes, sir.
We have another
caller. Okay, it's all good.
We got another caller, though. Caller 323, last 45279. What's your name and where you calling from?
Andre from L.A.
Oh, what's up, Andre? Appreciate you calling in. So we're going over the Dwayne Peterson story here in Denver about the tiny home village and the atrocities that he's endured while staying there. So we're just letting this brother vent tonight. So continue on, Dwayne.
Well, I don't want to monopolize the airtime, but at the time I moved in, there was myself, the black couple, and Freddie. Freddie eventually, and his girlfriend Owen, and you know Owen, Jesse. Were eventually
the binary person.
No, or I don't know. I maybe she is. I don't know. But you know, or she was at the Denver Homeless Out Loud meetings a lot, or not a lot, but
She used to stay at the house. She used to stay at the house.
Oh, right, exactly. So they were kicked out because Freddie destroyed his unit. He ripped up the steps, and he ripped up the landing and destroyed the inside of their unit. And so this was the straw that broke the camel's back, because he had been building up to this. But so he was eventually kicked out. But I will say this, prior to him being kicked out, he was being harassed by another white resident by the name of DJ. And DJ, as long as I knew him at the village, he was on an ankle monitor. He was arrested once for violating his probation while he was at BCV, and they allowed him back.
So that's the one that was roaming around like he owned the place. Because me and Godmother had visited the village about a year and a half ago, and there was some white boy that was out front, like, acting like he ran the place. Well, that might be the same DJ that you're speaking of.
It sounds like the same person. So anyway, so Freddie and Owen get kicked out, so then it's just myself and the other black couple. And so over time, I would talk periodically to the female in this relationship, and she would tell me about being harassed by the other white residents. And then all of a sudden they're gone. They're just, and no one knows where they are.
Your boy Dre dropped Shabaki from L.A.
All right. Okay. All right. Man, you're doing a great job, man. Yeah.
Go ahead, Dwayne.
Oh, so anyway, so then there was just me, and then there was this another person there. He is Hispanic, and he was the one I alluded to earlier about he was being harassed all the time. He's the one that I mentioned being detained a couple of times in the community house. He was being harassed all the time. I remember looking out of my door and seeing Cody and Bobby gang up on him, and Cody says to him, "We don't want you here," which is a common phrase. "We don't want you here. Mm-hmm. Give me your house keys and get off the property." And
man. Don't they have to go to court and go through eviction proceedings on that?
You would think, but it's a country village. So Dwayne was talking about it's not self-governed, but over time it's become self-governed because the city has given them more and more leeway and more money to fund the project, because it started off as a project, as a pilot.
Right.
And for the past 4 years, 4 or 5 years now, it's morphed into what it is now. And Dwayne was telling us about the conditions in the spot. Now he's talking about how they treat the black people or non-whites that are in the village.
That sounds like a discrimination lawsuit right there, man, because is that place federally funded?
No, it's
it is.
City.
Well,
oh, it
state.
Is?
So,
oh, state funded.
So,
okay.
Or the city. So during this whole time, and then one of the things I started doing, I started emailing city council. And so for the longest time, for months, I didn't hear from anyone. And then I sent out an email, one of many, saying, "Look, we've got a race problem at Beloved Community Village." So Debbie Ortega responds to my email saying, and she copied Cole on it, and she's like, You need to address this because we partially fund your program."
Dang.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the thing is, from what I understand, so I think, you know, there's gonna be this investigation, and so I found out through connection. They sent me an email correspondence between Cole and Debbie Ortega, in which Cole says, "We've got the situation under control." And I immediately emailed Debbie Ortega saying, "No, that's wrong." And I want to say this too. When I started calling the police and submitting complaints, I never heard from Cole directly. I always heard from him indirectly through a contact that I made prior to my residency at Beloved Community Village. Does that make sense? Hello?
That makes sense. And Lady Che has another question. So where are you at now with them? What's going on with the lawsuit? Are you having retaliation being brought against you due to the lawsuit? Are you in a safe place? How's your well-being?
I'm in a safe place, I filed a discrimination charge against CVC back in late last year. and with the civil rights division of the city of Denver, or with the state of Colorado.
Okay.
And so I submit a statement, and then Cole submits a statement, and then I rebut that statement. And the determination was, so my whole goal for filing that lawsuit was to hold CVC liable for tenant-on-tenant crime. So it was determined by this civil rights organization of the state that I didn't have a case, that I didn't prove that CVC is responsible. And I even highlighted court cases about landlords being liable for tenant-on-tenant crime. I even recited case law in my rebuttal, in my complaint. So I continue to call the police. I'm continuing to talk to city council about, like, hey, we've got a race and a crime problem going on here. So Cole writes to Debbie Ortega again and says, oh, by the way, we don't have any problems because that discrimination case was, he says, dismissed. I get that email thread, and I email Debbie Ortega back saying, and I copy Cole on this. I'm like, Cole, let's just make this clear. It was determined based on whatever investigation that you're not liable for tenant-on-tenant crime. That doesn't mean crime is not being committed. Let's just make that clear. I still have that email, by the way. And again, I never heard from Cole, but that's been – so that was that case. Now, today, I get an email from the police detective who wants to follow up on my report from last June against Cody Addison Phillips.
Oh, what? So
that's
just suing him directly now.
Right, exactly.
Okay. And what's been happening with that?
Oh, I left him an email. I left him a voicemail because he emailed me. He's like, hey, call me. And then I called him. He wasn't in, so I left him a voicemail. His name is Jesse Martinez? Hold on. What is his name? Oh, Jesse Ramirez. So I've been, as I told Brandy yesterday, I'm on Twitter now. So I've been tweeting Candice DeBaca, the Denver
yes.
Police Department, and Denver City Council, and all these news outlets about what's really happening at Beast Village
yeah.
Community Village.
What news outlets have you reached out to?
Oh, well, first of all, I wrote an opinion for the Denver Post last August.
Okay.
So I can send that out to you.
Yes, please do.
And just a couple of months ago, I was interviewed. There was a piece in there about my experiences at Beloved Community Village in the Glendale Cherry Creek Chronicle. So I'll forward that link. Yeah, so I'll forward that link to you.
That was your article?
Yep.
The one that was in the Glendale Chronicle?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah, because I kept hearing a lot of stuff about that article. And I was like, I think I know who wrote it, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, I'll send it again. So I will say this. So when I moved into Beloved Community Village, I continued to network with people, whether it was Britta Fisher, who is a complete waste, whether it was Christopher Connor, who is a complete waste. And so over time, I became connected with the registered neighborhood organizations throughout Denver, Colorado. One of the members of one of those registered neighborhood organizations connected me with the writer of Glendale Cherry Creek Chronicle. And he's like, hey, Dwayne, I want to do a story on you. And at the time I was interviewed by him, I had just moved out of BCD. And he's like, I want to hear your story.
So what was the exact date, I guess, that you moved out of Beloved Community Village?
It was February, Jesse, but I can't remember the exact date.
Was it before or after Valentine's Day?
After.
Oh, Preston's Day.
And the reason I know that is BCV had a Valentine's Day party, and I was on site. I didn't attend the party, but I was on site, and I got, you know, they were handing out gifts and things, and I never answered my door. So on the 15th, the next morning, I left.
Oh, Brother Isaiah is back with us.
Okay. Yeah, I'm here. They don't call it the drop.
Yeah, we still got like 25 minutes. Finish your thought, Dwayne.
So anyway, it was after Valentine's Day, Jesse. I don't remember the exact date, but when I initially. In early February, I told CBC and BCV staff, I'm like, I'm leaving. And they're like, oh, until you leave, we want you at the meetings. And I'm like, no, I'm not attending the meetings. And so they started putting up violation notices on my door. And I have copies of those as well. They're like, you're not attending meetings, you're not doing your chores. And I'm like, I don't care. And I'm like, so until the day I left, I was getting harassed by residents and BCV and CBC staff for quote unquote non-compliance. And I'm like, I don't give a fuck. I'm like, you guys are messed up.
They are messed up, demented. It's more like it, and they wonder why we call them devils.
So since I left, I've really been focusing on the racial component of what I experienced at Beloved Community Village, and I've just been bombarding as many people as possible with my story. I mean, Jesse, you've received some of the emails. I've copied Brandy on some. I'm like, I'm just putting it out there. I'm like, look, I saw people having sex, like a train session. I sent that out early this morning or something. I'm like, oh, by the way, I just want to let you know this is because what's been happening is Cole has been communicating with Connor McCormick at Westward. And Denver City Council about like, oh, everything Dwayne is saying never happened. And I've just been replying by saying, Cole doesn't know anything. I'm like,
Where did he go? Let's just trying to figure that out. Where did he go? Did he go back to where he came from? Or what happened to Cole? He just dropped off the map.
Well, you know they hired a COO for the first time, and he or she is she's in control. I can't remember her name. Shalay something. She's taking over. She's being put in charge of operations at CVC.
Okay.
But Cole's really active on Twitter. Don't get me wrong, because they have on June 2nd, they have a, you know, they have, they're having a 5-year anniversary at Beloved Community Village.
Oh, we're gonna crash that June 2nd.
Yeah, I'll send out, because if you go to, well, I'll send it out, but if you go to Colorado Village Collaborative, and I can't remember, it's under news, and there's a announcement in there about their 5-year celebration.
Their 5-year. Lady Chase said you can count on her for her the biggest thing. She also wants to know what is your hope, what is your final goal, what do you plan to get out of all of this? What do you want to get out of all of this? Do you want a house? They owe you a house at this point. Or cut the check, because you're suing them civilly, right? Because they're going to have to come off some monetary, right?
Well, I've been looking for an attorney, and I haven't found one yet. But to be honest...
Oh, I have an attorney for you. But
okay,
we'll
so,
discuss that off air.
So what... There are several things I want. One of them is I want Cody Addison Phillips to go to jail, or I want him to be charged. I want him to be arrested. I want him to know that I have not forgotten about him. That's the first thing.
Okay.
The second thing, everything is fine, because to be honest, I'm kind of at the point where I want to put all this behind me, but, you know, all of a sudden when I say that, I get an email from the detective who wants to investigate Cody Addison Phillips. So I'm like, oh, I'm still in it then. So I don't care if people are prosecuted or charged. I just want them to know that they haven't been able to push me into silence, because that's what they did to all the other people of color. They're like, because the other people of color at BCV would tell me, I'm not going to say anything. And so I took that and ran with it. And every message, and during a certain time frame, every message that I sent to Cole and CBC, I said, you may have silenced other people of color, but you're not going to silence me. I know what's going on. I see it every day. So which is one of the things, because yesterday I signed up for public comment. I knew I wasn't going to, and I mentioned this to Brandy yesterday. I'm like, I knew I wasn't going to comment. I didn't want to, but I wanted them to know that I'm still out here. You know what I mean? I want them to know that I'm still fighting.
With all that being said, do you have a dollar amount that you're looking to receive from these mugs, or you just want justice? But it seems like you just want justice. You want the people that have wronged you to pay the consequences of wronging you. And do you want anything out of this, like housing, your own place to live, monetary funds for pain and suffering? Like, you're entitled to all that.
Well, I think, you know, Jesse, and to answer the other question, I think I want, I haven't really thought about it a lot, but I think I want all of the above. Because one of the things I did was I sent, and Brandy knows this, I sent and I don't think I copied you on this, Jesse, but I sent Denver City Council a housing proposal, and I said, this is what I want. And in that proposal, specific to housing, I said, I want $25,000. And I threw that number out because I was thinking, and this is, and I'm leaving a lot out of this explanation, but I was thinking about if I found an apartment for $1,000 and using the first home model that does not exist, and then multiplying that by
the housing first model that's been adopted in other states such as Utah,
right.
Colorado.
So if I can say something about the housing first model, so I was interviewed by Catholic Charities in 2020,
okay.
and they about housing first, and they're like, oh, that model doesn't exist. We need you to get on your feet as soon as possible. I'm like, but I thought it was 2 years, and they're like, yeah, it was 2 years, but we've just had a lot of people take advantage of the program. They destroy the properties. They don't, you know, they don't want to move out at the end of their term. And I'm like, oh, so the rest of us are being punished for somebody else's mistakes. And they're like, yeah. So so basically, I want, first of all, I want justice. But it need not come in the sense of, let me retract that. Given what happened in Buffalo and then what happened today, I am, and with Cody, I am pushing the domestic terrorism narrative as far as I can take it.
Right.
Because his threat to use a firearm against me is, to me, domestic terrorism. And I'm a black person.
Yes.
And so.
Yeah.
I want to see, I would like to see him do jail time.
Well, I would like to see him in a box, but that's that's neither here or there. The ultimate thing is, what do you want to see, Dwayne? And thank you for coming on tonight. We're down to our last 14 minutes. So we're going to start moving toward our closing. But did you have anything last and real pressing that you wanted to mention before we get to the closing statements?
Well, I want to appreciate everyone for having me on and listening to me rant and rave and my tirade, and that black people are...
And we've invited you on to Frontline Black News, so feel free to join us on the StreamYard this Saturday. We'll send you the link. But continue on, Dwayne. That's it.
Oh, and as we all know, black people are under attack in America, and there are entities out there that want to protect the truth. They want to protect white people from their crime. They want to protect the public. You know, and that's where I'm at right now. I want people to know that, well, I mean, we all know, but black people are under attack, and to just, you know, make your voices heard. I mean, there are black representatives in Colorado who just won't help me because they're like, you're just too political. It's too political what you're doing. And I'm like, but you're black, you know. And so I don't expect to win every battle, but I do continue forward because I know inch by inch there are people, you know, such as yourselves that are out there listening and who are like, you know, and we just have to galvanize and keep, you know, keep making our voices heard. So, but thanks for having me on.
Okay. So we're down our last 12 minutes. Brother Isaiah, did you have anything you wanted to add before you do the closing?
I just want to say this, like, you know, I've been here on day zero. Like, you know, I appreciate the platform, and I really hope you win, Bubba J, from this, I hope you win for the whole Denver. I hope you become mayor, because this time right now, we're straight up a crisis right now, because you see all these mass shootings out here right now, the one in Buffalo, and right now, that's mass shooting right down, I think, like, I forgot what state is it in, like, something like some white supremacists, they're shooting down the elementary school, like, come on now. Come on now, time for us to, you know, take a stand right now, because this is a lot of shit is going on, like, because I'm tired of seeing this shit every day. Yeah, we definitely is, so, but I say you better stand up on your own 2 feet and rise up and stand up for yourself, because right now, because there ain't enough.
We're at war right now,
Black Sun. So each one, two, so we all we got. Stand up. It's some one love, Black Power. Love y'all. Peace.
Peace, but as there always, day zero. Black Power. We're going to put it next to Lady Che. Lady Che, you're closing.
All right. Thank you, Dwayne. You know, like I said yesterday on the phone, we have 3 platforms, and we're committed to making sure that if not anything, to be the biggest pain in the ass ever to get this handled. You know, at least that's my guarantee. They hate me. You know, I truly believe that since you are doing the law students, you know, they should just cut the check, give you everything you're asking for, because you deserve it. Not only that, I think that you've more than paid your dues to have earned that. You know, to go through such levels of fucking racist atrocities on a regular basis, and then to be ignored and or shoved under the rug, or just like you have to keep it pushing. The fact that you had to start your own GoFundMe page to try to build finances for housing. I mean, you know, I like a question about that, because this is that they have to pay for it, right? Yeah, you know, but we can talk about this another time, maybe Saturday, hopefully. My thing is this, is like, you deserve to have a place to live. They should not make you continue to jump through hoops and loop. And rigmarole is what my father would like to call it. To get into housing, again, if you were good enough the first time, you should be more than good enough this time. And it should be to give you something that is safe for you. I mean, considering all these allowances they make for other people and other buffer classes and or identity agendas and whatnot, you know what I mean? They seem to make all these paths for that. You know, you can't go to a shelter if you're LGBTQ plus, or, you know, let alone if you have a pet or you have a maid. Or, you know, now they're accommodating everybody. So why not you? you know, and here, you know, even if Colorado seems to be the most whitewashed-ass area, you know, at least you know that we live here. You know, we see you, and we have to hear you. We have to hear you. You have to have somebody, if not for nothing, to at least stand with you and battle this system of racism and white supremacy. I mean, at some point, it will maybe not come to an end fully, but they're going to get an understanding that they can't keep treating us like this. They can't keep treating you like this, and they're definitely not going to treat us like this. It should be around this month. So, you know, you got us as your to help you, you know, and anybody else that we pray stands with you and helps you. We'll talk a little bit offline as far as your legal representation. You know, we got people in mind. Always black first, always. I want to say this, black family. Yeah, I always want to say this, black family, too. Stay dangerous. And, you know, we have, at this point, if you're watching the news, black family, fuck what everybody else is saying. Listen, stay dangerous. At this point, you can't go to a grocery store. You can't send your children to school. I mean, it's not safe for us out there. They consider us soft targets. And if you saw the children, the little babies, get taken off the map today, if that right there is not settling in your soul, regardless if they're not our color or not, there's a little baby, and there's a little soft target. And that's how it matters right now, you know what I mean? And the stuff that happened in New York and Milwaukee, everywhere else, it's been cracking off lately. Texas with these little, what I like to call the under 20 little devils, okay? There's something in the air. There's something in the vibration of the shift of the universe. Whatever's making them go fucking crazy and do this to us, know to self, power tools to stay dangerous, be one, black first, black power. And I'm going to pass this to Shay. A black power brother there. Talk to you soon, brother. And I'm passing you to Che, and he's going to close us out, okay? We'll talk soon. Thank you, Dwayne, for coming on and sharing.
Thanks, everybody.
Yes, so the air date of this program was May 24, 2022. I'd like to thank everybody that called in tonight. Brother Isaiah, who's been with us since day one. General Shabaka. Brother Dre from L.A. And, of course, our guest tonight, Dwayne Peterson. Thank you for sharing your story with us. Hopefully it brings more attention and awareness to the racism and white supremacy that exists within the unhoused community and the world.
Yep.
It's a travesty, black family. If you don't realize we're at war by now, you'll never realize it. I'm just going to go back to picking the cotton. There's two types of black people. The black people that realize that there is a system of racism and white supremacy and fight it and get on code, mm-hmm. and those that go back to picking the cotton. Well, here on Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced, we ain't picking nobody's goddamn cotton. And we ain't no house niggas. We the field niggas.
Yep.
We are fighting against this global system of racism and white supremacy at all levels, at all angles, on all fronts. And we are all black platform. So unapologetically black platform. We are not bashful about our blackness. We bathe in it. We relish in it. We love it to death. And they hate us because of it. And don't let them say the fucking message.
They chose around us. They chose us since day zero, since day one. Ever since they came to this planet to terrorize and for the mass destruction.
Yeah, but the cave dweller, the caveman's time of terror is running out.
Mm-hmm.
And they know it.
Yep.
They've already mapped it out.
Yep.
They're dying out. That's why they're raising so much hell about this abortion and other shit.
Yep.
They're dying out.
Mm-hmm.
And they know they're dying out.
They know it.
And they're trying to take as many of us with them as they can. So that's what this is all about,
right.
Black family. Just keep your head
they
on the swivel.
They're trying to establish, guess what? But guess what? We don't die. We multiply. We come right back. If karma
yeah,
don't
we
bite,
like
we're going to bite them in the ass. Yep.
We like Crips and Bebe's kids. We don't die, we multiply. So we're going to keep dying, and they're going to keep dying out. And this war is going to continue. We have to start waging back, Black family. I understand we need to get our voices out, but we need to do more than just get our voices out. We got to dismantle the system of global white supremacy and replace it with a system of justice. Guaranteeing
Black
nobody is mistreated
self-defense classes.
And those that need the most constructive help get it. That's the code that we live by, and that's the code we urge every Black person in this country and in this world to live by. Global system, Black family. So we're down to our last few seconds. Don't nobody hang up. We're about to go into overtime. Dwayne, did you have anything you wanted to say before we go off the air?
Oh, just again, thanks everyone for having me, and I really appreciate the camaraderie and the support. To be honest, I don't know how I've survived through all of this. Just thanks to everyone. I appreciate it.
Oh, and Lady Che wanted me to remind you all we're having Malcolm X Day this Saturday, and Black Empowerment Day is what we're dubbing it. Black Empowerment Day this Saturday, May 28th. So if you're in the Denver area, make sure you come down to the Holly Shopping Center and you can meet me. We're having a meet and greet with me as well for the campaign. So you can meet and greet with the next mayor of Denver. Also, Sister B, Queen Bianca, who usually calls in. With peace, love, light, and Black empowerment, we're going to go out with Black. Peace.
Black, peace, Black power.
Sound about right. No, that sound about right. No, you ain't never said a lie. You ain't told a lie. Yeah. Everybody wanna be an athlete. Everybody wanna rap on beat. Everybody wanna eat watermelon and fried chicken. Sorry, it's the Black thing. Everybody wanna hit after me. Watch your back, cause they after me. Got different women up in my living room trying to measure my dick. Maybe it's the Black thing. Yeah. Don't subtweet at me. We was kicking freestyles in the backseat. Classrooms like a gladly. You buy and sell drugs in the alley. Yeah, finally got a pot of compassion. Working overtime and you can tell if you listen. I don't wanna find no divine division. I be getting high, niggas, the Black thing. Black shots till she knock me. I be on new shit so they copy. The debauchery. Go ahead then watch me, nigga. Don't watch TV. You can get it all on CD. Vinyl with homicide. Every time you at my recital, I will serve you like appetizers. You should know, nigga, I'm your idol. I'm your idol now. Pop a dog pound and jigger. Everybody wanna be Black. Don't nobody wanna be a nigga. Feel like Malcolm X. Peeking outside my window. Everybody wanna be Black, but don't nobody wanna be a nigga. Everybody tryna get dreads and shit. But they ain't African. All the light girls getting a tan so they can darken their skin. I'm sorry, it's the Black thing. I don't give a fuck, yeah, I said the shit. Rhetoric. Everybody wanna design something for Louis Vuitton, baby, it's the Black thing. Blacked out in the backseat of the Black Jeep, listening to Black by me. You can catch me a taste of soul, eating on gumbo with the Black IP. Yeah, Black on, Black nigga, I'm back on, track my shit, Black owned. If you ain't a nigga, then you can't say nigga, it's the Black thing. Yeah, Spike Lee, do the right thing. Don't step on my Nikes, just got these. Go roll for the neck piece, nigga, you up on my white tee. Or you wanna be just like me, huh? Do the police wanna lock me up? Strap your own creep, Black F. Both ones. What it's gon' be, you can ask about me.
Grew up in the West,
pop a dog pound and jigger.
Everybody wanna be Black,
don't nobody wanna be a nigga.
Feel like Malcolm X,
peeking outside my window.
Everybody wanna be Black, but
don't nobody wanna be a nigga.